We have found ourselves living in the pursuit of happiness. There's this cultural belief that we should always be happy, that joy is the ultimate pinnacle of existence. That's just not the case. We are not meant to be happy all the time. In pursuing happiness at all costs, we don't know how to be with our anger. We don't know how to be with our grief, our sadness, our frustration, our shame, our guilt. All of these emotions that we've deemed negative, we either minimize and push aside, or we allow them to fester and they become something else, something unrecognizable. Ritual and ceremony allows us to see the root of the emotions that we're holding, brings us that moment to acknowledge what was, what is, what will be.
Last spring, I was invited to an informal, intimate backyard gathering. The host had invited a couple of friends and asked them to invite other women who were doing purpose-driven work. A lot of us have school-age kids, and it can be difficult to make friends and grow your community at this stage in our lives. And the host wanted to expand her own community. I was honored to attend, and I was a little bit nervous because sitting in a circle with a group of people you don't know yet can be a little bit intimidating, but I was yearning for these kinds of connections, and so I went. The host and I became fast friends, and today we're lucky enough to have her as a guest on Creative Genius. Megan is the co-founder and CEO of Be Ceremonial. As a mythologist, storyteller, and celebrant, her passion is bringing people together through storytelling. She's also the co-founder of Seeking Ceremony, where she's convened hundreds of workshops and retreats and ceremonies that span the life cycle, everything from fertility and birth, pregnancy loss, lifestyle and relationships, end of life and grief. Megan has a deep understanding of the potency that ritual and ceremony can offer us. As a celebrant and end of life doula, she has helped people create ceremonies around moments of grief and loss in their life that most of us have been very uncomfortable dealing with up until now. We talk about the ceremony-shaped hole in our society right now, the lack of rituals and ceremonies surrounding losses like death or miscarriages in our society. And she talks about where to start if you're wanting to bring ritual and ceremony into your life. We talk about how through ceremony and ritual, we're able to heal old wounds and actually free trapped parts of ourselves. She shares with us examples of rituals that she's helped people create, some of them resolving traumatic experiences that happened 30 years ago. She shares with us her 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, which are the ingredients for the formula for making powerful, meaningful rituals for yourself and for your community. I think my favorite moment of this whole episode, though, is when Megan tells the story of when her father came to her asking her for help in crafting a ceremony for his dying best friend. I was weeping when Megan told that story. It was so beautiful. What I loved about her right away was her serious but joyful approach to ceremony and ritual. I've intuited for a really long time that when we submerge and push down our creative side, with it go a lot of things that we might not categorize as creative necessarily. And ritual and ceremony are one of them. When I think of the word ritual and ceremony, they seem very loaded with a lot of cultural ideas. Ritual to me almost has scary energy around it, like it's going to be some sort of dangerous ritual sacrifice involving blood and brains and a cauldron. And the word ceremony feels very formal and official, like a wedding ceremony or a funeral ceremony. Neither one of those feel particularly accessible. And yet, what's underneath both ritual and ceremony are something we all yearn for, to mark the milestones of the important things in our life. I look around at our culture and I see how we're yearning to create rituals and ceremonies, but for many of the same reasons that we don't feel creativity is accessible to us, we don't feel these things are accessible to us either, or we feel that we've forgotten how to do it, or that there's nobody around to show us how to do it, or that we might get it wrong. I mean, many of the same objections that we have about accessing our creativity seem to apply to accessing ritual and ceremony. It is in our bones, as Megan says, to be ritualistic, to have ceremonies. And in modern Western life, it's almost as if we've forgotten how to mark important life events with rituals and ceremonies. And Megan will walk us through what she's learned about creating ceremonies and rituals, including giving us some ideas and pointing us in the right direction for creating our own rituals that are as unique as we are. This conversation that you're about to hear with Megan is a potentially life-changing invitation to bring the element of ritual and ceremony into your life in a meaningful way that can have incredible impact on the rest of your life. Before I introduce you to Megan, I want to invite you to sign yourself up for the next Activating Intuition and Creativity workshop. These happen every month in the lead up to the full moon. The intention of these workshops is to spend time together in community with others in a sacred space where you're safe to access this tender part of yourself that wants so badly to unfurl, but that maybe doesn't always feel safe to in the hustle and bustle of day-to-day life, where all of your protective parts are busy keeping you safe. This is an hour where we sit together and through a channeled meditation that I offer, I allow myself to be the voice of creativity. I let creativity speak through me to you to help you uncover and activate it in yourself. The feedback I've been getting from participants who've taken part in this workshop is truly moving. I received a message earlier today from somebody who was woken up in the middle of the night, unable to sleep, and decided to go and watch the replay of the last workshop and ended up uncovering something that had been holding her back for nearly 50 years. Even in the replay, was able to access this feeling of safety and possibility to explore this and access what she feels is a new level of freedom. When I read messages like that from people, it's so powerful and moving for me. And it makes me want to just crawl into your computers and sign you up for all of the workshops because I know how powerful and transformative these workshops can be. So if you haven't signed up yet for the next one, it's going to be happening on December 21st. That's a really busy time. For those who celebrate Christmas, that's very close to what can be a very stressful time. This is a deeply nourishing gift you can give yourself that will carry you forward in ways that might transform your entire life. I cannot recommend this workshop enough. Everything you need to know to sign up for it is on kateshepherdcreative.com. And just so you know, if you're signed up for the Patreon at the Colorful Community tier, you actually get access to these workshops on a monthly basis as part of your membership. This small act of signing up for this workshop and carving out this hour of time to give yourself could truly end up being one of those moments you look back on as the moment that changed everything for you. They're powerful. It's an honor for me to lead them, and I really want to see you there. Megan and her husband stumbled into ceremony after years of recurrent miscarriages and the death of a parent. They didn't know how to grieve the mountain of seemingly invisible moments that surrounded the experiences that they were having. In our culture, we don't have prescribed rituals and ceremonies for many of these things that cause us so much pain. So they decided to craft their own rituals to acknowledge their grief in ways that felt meaningful to them. They told their story through ceremony, and then they decided that they wanted to make these tools more accessible to everybody. They're passionate about helping people to reimagine the role of ritual and ceremony in their lives. They have an app, and she teaches workshops and retreats. And actually, Megan and I are co-hosting a retreat on Bowen Island in British Columbia in January. It's a New Year's retreat. I think by the time this episode goes to air, there might be one spot left. There'll be information on how to sign up for that in the show notes. Megan is a beautiful human being. This is a beautiful and important conversation. And my prayer, my hope is that you hear something in this conversation today that is powerfully transformative for you and your life. As you're listening to this today, there may be somebody that pops up for you that is going through a difficult time, maybe a death of a loved one or a big life transition. Take a minute to send them a link to this episode. There's probably something in it that they need to hear, and that's why you thought of them. I hope you enjoy my conversation with Megan Sheldon. Hello, Megan.
Hello.
So happy you're here joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you for coming. I know what you do, but our listeners don't know what you do, and I actually can't wait for them to hear what you do. When you meet a new group of humans, let's say at a backyard dinner party or something, how do you describe the work that you do in the world?
Yeah. And these days it's at kindergarten pickup. And I often say that I'm a celebrant, an end-of-life doula. And they kind of look a little intrigued. And I say that I help people create ceremonies around moments of grief and loss in their life. If they seem intrigued, I then let them know that together with my husband, we built an app that gives them the tools to be able to create their own rituals and ceremonies. And usually at that point, people, they're intrigued by what we mean by ritual and ceremony, because we have a lot of baggage and a lot of preconceived notions and stereotypes and limitations. If you go to Wikipedia and search for ritual or ceremony, I can guarantee you the definition you find is not my definition. A big part of this process for me has been redefining my own relationship with ritual and ceremony, and then really being descriptive and not prescriptive with other people so that they can figure out what it means to them personally.
One of my questions for you, and I'll get back to it in a minute, is what is ritual? Like, how do we define ritual and ceremony? Before we get into that, I just want to sort of set the tone for our conversation. You've probably heard me say, I feel like humanity is glitching because we've cut ourselves off from creativity, which I define as gut instinct, intuition, inspiration, desire. If you look at a lot of the ancient cultures, creativity and ritual and ceremony were all things that were deeply embedded in all of them, maybe like most of them for sure. They seem to be part of our DNA. Like they seem to be part of our operating systems, the tools that we need to navigate human existence, right? We seem to need these things. But the current iteration of this Western culture that we live in, we've all but stripped all of those things out. And so I'm always coming at it from a perspective of we're disconnected from creativity. But when I started thinking about the conversation that you and I were going to have, there's this feeling, I can feel that this disconnection we have from creativity is not separate from the disconnection that we have from ritual and ceremony. And why have we done that? And I can't put my finger on it, but I'm hoping that you and I can kind of explore that, feel around a little bit of that into this conversation. This is maybe a good place for us to ask you, what are ritual and ceremony and why are they important for us?
Yeah, well, just to jump back, before we get into that, you know, you were talking about this idea of humanity glitching right now. I went through recurrent pregnancy loss while losing my father-in-law to ALS. So it was a grief storm. It was a time of so much loss and anticipatory grief and ambiguous loss, this type of grief where you can't quite put a name on it. And a friend of mine, she shared with me that there's a ceremony-shaped hole in our society right now.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as she said that, that's what I felt I was missing. You know, not only just around a miscarriage, but around reaching a due date. And what do you do on that day that you were supposed to have a baby and you don't? Or when your father-in-law receives a terminal diagnosis, what do you do on that day? You know, 3 years later, when he dies, we have a little bit of guidance, but there's so many moments along the path that we're lost. And for me, that ceremony-shaped hole goes hand in hand with our disconnection from mythos, you know, myth. Religion is based in myth. So for me, I don't identify as religious, but I am spiritual. I am connected to something through nature. But there's no guidebook, there's no roadmap for how to create ritual and ceremony when you are so disconnected from your cultural roots, from any type of body of knowledge. So you really feel like you're on your own. And for the most part, we do nothing because we don't know where to start. And that's what I hear with every single person that comes through my door or through our app is, where do I start? If I want to think about ritual and ceremony in a new way, if I want to acknowledge these seemingly invisible moments that are happening every day all around me, where do I start? And talking about the definition of ritual and ceremony, one of our mandates, one of our kind of missions with Be Ceremonial is not to become what we have run away from. So we're not here to tell you what to do. We're not going to give you a script and say, follow this. Here is the ritual. Here is the ceremony. We're going to give you inspiration. We're going to give you ideas, a bit of guidance, but ultimately we want you to apply it to your own life through your own lens. A lot of us moved away from the prescriptive versions of ritual and ceremony because it wasn't necessarily applicable to our modern lifestyle, to what we're facing right now. So when I think about a ritual, I think about it as simply an intentional symbolic action that hopes to create meaning. So if we break that down a little bit, it's an intentional. So it's intentional. You're not just doing it because it just is there, right? You have our morning routines, our habits, the things that we fall into. I often say that we fall into routine, but we step into ritual. So you are being intentional with your energy in some way. The second part is symbolic. So you're looking at symbolism. And this is where, for me, the creativity can really come into play. There are so many different layers and levels of symbolism. There's personal symbolism, things that are meaningful to me that you would never know. You might come into my home and see this rock sitting on my table and not realize that this rock has three hearts on it, symbolic of each of my pregnancy losses. And when I hold this rock, I can reconnect with grief I held 10 years ago, and it's palpable. This rock becomes a symbol for me. So that's a personal symbol. But there's also family symbols. There's community symbols. There's universal symbols. So I might go down to, you know, the beach and light a bonfire and release some things into that fire, words that I've written on paper. And that becomes that universal element of looking at fire as a purification, this idea of transforming something through that power of a bonfire. We're lighting a candle, and that universal element of we can go anywhere in the world. And if you see somebody taking a moment and pausing and lighting a candle, you have a sense that they're moving through something. They're recognizing something. So you've got an intentional symbolic action. The action for me is you are doing something even if you're not doing anything. So a beautiful example here in Canada is we have a 2 minutes of silence on Remembrance Day. So that idea of holding silence can be an action. Of not doing anything, that becomes an action itself. You might go down to the beach and take a rock and throw it in the water. That action of throwing it becomes part of the ritual. And then the fourth part is the hope of creating meaning. And this is where I give people a lot of permission, because I have tried rituals and they have failed. My intention was kind of clear. My symbolism was there. The action was there, but it didn't quite do it. It wasn't quite something that I necessarily want to repeat again in my life. The hope of creating meaning is we can't go into something knowing what's going to come out of it. All we can do is try to create the conditions for us to move through that and experience whatever we're going to experience, especially if we're holding a community kind of ritual. Everybody in the community is going to experience something different. We can't prescribe what their meaning is going to be. So if we think about a ritual as holding those four elements of intention, symbolism, action, and meaning, then we start to get somewhere. You know, for the Wikipedia definition is using words like rigid and repetition and religious. So we're kind of moving away from that and moving into this fluid mentality of a ritual is what you need it to be. And then if you take a string of rituals and pair them together in a way that tells a story, that's when you get a ceremony. So a ceremony often follows a rite of passage, and this kind of traditional idea of, you know, we're talking about looking back in culture across time. Traditional rite of passage follows these different stages where you're separating from the past, you're letting go of something, you're releasing. And then you find yourself in the midst of your ceremony where you're kind of in that liminal space. You're neither here nor there. And you do something to acknowledge the present moment. You know, where are we in this very moment? How can we acknowledge through ritual the here and now? And then the third part of the rite of passage is, how are we going to incorporate what we've learned and carry this forward? So this often takes the shape of a legacy or an intention that we're going to set and manifest for the future. Take this traditional rite of passage structure, we can then start to play with it and think, okay, if I'm going to create a ceremony and I'm going to string together these two or three or four different rituals, what's the story that I want the ceremony to tell? What is it going to take me through? How are we going to acknowledge what was, what is, and what will be?
We're missing that. It is such a huge part of, again, I'm going back to my question about how are these things, humanity's glitching. We know that like things are not, this is not the world that is possible for us or that we even all really want. This feels to me intuitively like, so I have so many little internal alarm bells going, this is such a big piece. This is such a big piece. If you were to walk through the forest every day on your way to, let's say you had to walk through the forest on your way to school or on your way to work every day. And every day there was this like hole that had been kind of eroded from a root that got stuck there. And every day you tripped and you fell into this hole and it really hurt. You kept falling into this hole every time. It might be useful for you to say stop before you go on your walk that day and go, okay, why do I keep falling into that hole? Like, how does that keep happening? Oh, because I'm not paying attention when so I know that today when I walk that path, I'm going to be looking and I'm not going to fall into that hole. And I feel like we've fallen and continue to fall into this hole of not having these things in our life, of not making space for this thing in our life. I wonder if you think it's useful to explore a little bit, just to create some awareness so that we don't keep doing it. How did we do this? How did we get to a point where we've shut down this really important thing, or where we created barriers to it for ourselves. We limit ourselves. How did we do that?
Yeah. And there's a lot of different things at play there. I mean, we look at our individualistic culture here in Western society, and ritual and ceremony has a role in self-care. But ultimately, for me and for many ritualists, ritual is about a community care. How do we come together to move through these times of change together on our own terms, but as that community? And we've really lost a lot of that. I think, you know, for especially those who have moved away from religion or have moved away from their cultural traditions physically or spiritually or mentally, when we go through something where, you know, where is that community gathering? And most people know ceremonies around birth, marriage, and death. That's kind of the three things that people are familiar with ceremony. And for the most part, most of those ceremonies are fairly prescribed, right? You're given the wedding script, giving the funeral script. This is what you follow. You might personalize it a little bit, but we've lost that ability to actually throw out the script and reinvent something that's purposeful in that moment and symbolic to our unique experience. So there's that individualistic culture has harmed us from acknowledging these as a community. Looking at the fast-paced modern world of just move forward, push things down, don't acknowledge them, don't get stuck. In generations before, you know, people could get swallowed up in a lot of things. And so the antidote for a lot of people was just to, you know, push it aside. It's not, you know, it's not personal, it's business. Just push things down and move forward. Get over our grief. I think many of us were sold the story that grief follows these kind of neat and tidy five stages. And then you get to the end of it and you have closure, or you're over it. We're given 3 days of bereavement leave. A lot of the problems that we face right now in life and the glitching, the ceremony-shaped hole, a lot of it stems from our inability to talk about and focus on death and dying and grief. As I've stepped into the space of being an end-of-life doula and a funeral celebrant and helping people acknowledge all of these invisible moments that surround the grieving process, you realize that 100, 150 years ago, we used to see death all the time. It was right in front of us, right? Or the parlor room in the home was where somebody's body would be after they died, and we would spend time with their body. We would acknowledge the grief on different levels, physically, emotionally, spiritually. We would come together as a community and we would have our own moments to grieve. When death got taken out of the home and medicalized and put into the hospital setting, we lost touch with it. And so we weren't often with people when they died, or if they were, we didn't want to be close to them. We didn't want to touch them. We became really fearful of death. And in doing that, we lost a lot of the rituals that actually support us through our grief. Things like bathing a body after somebody dies, you know, spending time with them. Not as soon as somebody dies these days, you rush to the phone and you call like, help me. What am I supposed to do? And somebody comes and picks up the body and takes it away. Whereas those hours, those days following a death is some of the most sacred time for our mind to catch up with our body and realize this is part of the grieving process. So in taking these difficult experiences and trying to sanitize them, we've robbed ourselves of the things that we naturally knew how to do. You talked at the beginning that we know we're innately ritualistic. And I believe that ritual is in our bones. I'm not here to teach people how to be ritual beings. I'm here to help them remember, because we have this in us. It is not complicated. It does not need to cost a lot of money. It does not need a lot of special supplies. There are things at our fingertips that we can draw on to acknowledge these moments of change. But most of us just we've been disconnected from that. So we don't know where to start.
The theme of this whole season of this podcast is learning to see. And when you're learning how to draw, your brain will default to the version of things that are easiest, safest, whatever, you know, fits its kind of definition of what seems like the safest thing, whatever priorities it has at the moment, that's what your brain is going to show you. And it will show you those things and it will block everything else out. It takes a discipline and practices to learn to see what is actually there. The same thing happens when we practice rituals and ceremonies. They help us, it seems, to see things as they actually are, to see that death is a part of life. Because I think we've all kind of told ourselves somehow that death is this thing, but not to me. Like, that's like, it's not going to happen to me. You know, like on some weird level, we're always trying to stay really young, and there's like this real aversion to death. Do you feel like in your experience, ritual and ceremony has a role in helping us to learn how to see things differently? Like, can they help us learn how to actually completely shift our perspectives?
What's interesting, you're talking about the artistic process and creativity. If I think of the times that I'm creative in life and whatever medium that shows up through, I'm trying to express something I'm feeling, right? There's an emotion there. And when I think about ritual and ceremony, there are so many emotions in our life that deserve to be acknowledged and recognized. We have found ourselves living in the pursuit of happiness, right? There's this cultural belief that we should always be happy, that joy is the ultimate pinnacle of existence. And that's just not the case. We are not meant to be happy all the time and pursuing happiness at all costs. We don't know how to be with our anger. We don't know how to be with our grief, our sadness, our frustration, our shame, our guilt. All of these emotions that we've deemed negative, we either minimize and push aside, or we allow them to fester and they become something else, something unrecognizable. Ritual and ceremony allows us to see the root of the emotions that we're holding. If we think about a grief ritual that brings us that moment to acknowledge what was, what is, what will be, we're going deeper. We're going into those layers of the emotions and saying, okay, what is it actually that's here? And in our app, we've launched all these amazing rituals around anger. And it's phenomenal to me to have these conversations with people lately of being like, oh, like, how do you express anger? Like, that's been something that we've been trained, especially as women, to not feel, to not express. Like, anger is something that we just need to turn around, and we can be sad. That's okay. But anger is something that, you know, we're not invited to explore. So what happens when we turn that over on its head and say, okay, like, what are some rituals that are going to help me express the anger that I feel? Because there is a growing anger, whether it's around climate change, whether it's around what's happening in the world right now, whether it's, you know, what's happening in my day-to-day life. So rather than taking that anger and suppressing it or transforming it into something a little bit more docile, how do we express through ritual that anger and allow that power, that energy, that kind of life force to come through us in that process? The creative action for me is it's coming up with the ritual. It's thinking about, okay, there's this anger here. What are we going to turn, you know, what can allow it to come out in different shapes and forms? And one day I might choose one ritual and another day something totally different. And you might come in and say, okay, that one doesn't work for me, but here I'm going to take this and I'm going to add my own spin on it. I'm going to add my own personality. And then suddenly it allows you to see what you're really feeling. And only when we acknowledge what we're holding, what we're feeling, can we move through those emotions. And we can get stuck in our emotions. And when we get stuck in them, that's when those repetitive behaviors happen. We get kind of stuck in generational trauma. We get stuck in having the same conversations over and over and over because we haven't moved through it, right? It's like that light at the end of the tunnel. We have to move through the ugliness sometimes, the difficulty, the challenges of that emotion. And most times we kind of get close to things like anger and guilt and shame. And we think, nope, not for me. This is too hard, too scary. I'm going to back away from this tunnel and I'm just going to stay on the other side. And so we don't get to get to the other side of the tunnel where we've actually processed and moved through and acknowledged what we needed to get to the other side of that emotion.
And we had a guest on, I think she was in season one. She's a forensic psychologist and she does a lot of work around trauma and processing. And she talked about those experiences when they're undigested. And she talked about them as digested. She called them trauma balls. And just they sort of sit in your gut. Like imagine if you just ate piece after piece of bread and they just remained undigested in your gut. I mean, eventually things would stop working the way they were supposed to. You'd start to feel crappier and crappier. You're carrying around all this stuff that you don't have the facilities to carry around. And processing, whether it's through ritual, ceremony, whatever ways you choose to support yourself, actually helps you to, and your psyche and your whole system, process and then put away. Because when they're sitting in your gut, your whole system doesn't know where they live. But if it's like, oh, I've processed that, I've felt that, that goes here in my internal system. It still lives with you. That thing didn't go away. It's not about making those things or experiences go away or completely resolve them. They're a part of you, but they're a more resolved part of you and they get to live in a place in you where they're not running the show, or they're not taking all your attention the way they would if they were a loaf of bread that was just, you know, undigested in your gut, trying to walk around with that.
This episode of Creative Genius is brought to you by Morning Moon Nature Jewelry. Instantly familiar, yet unlike anything you've ever owned. This extraordinary handcrafted heirloom jewelry is famous for its incredible detail of actual textures from nature. Get 15% off your first order and feel the wonder. Use coupon code CREATIVEGENIUS at lovemorningmoon.com.
I had a woman reach out who had an abortion 30 years ago, and she had never told anybody about the experience, and she wanted to finally create a ceremony to acknowledge it. And so we worked together. I talked with her, and then I sent her a bunch of ritual ideas, and I said, pick the ones that are meaningful to you, and then expand on them. Allow them to become what you need them to be. And she ended up sharing back her story with us a few weeks later. And for her, it was a life-changing experience. She was finally able to acknowledge something that she has been holding on to, that kind of trauma ball for 30 years. It's been inside of her with no way out, no way to feel validated or seen, no way to move through it. She ended up creating this beautiful labyrinth in the forest near her home. And along the way, she wrote herself notes that she'd wished she'd heard from other people. So she thought about all the voices that were either inside her or in the people around her at the time. And she wrote down either what they did say and burned that, or she wrote down what she wished they would have done or said. And she created her own healing circle through this experience. And I gave her a little bit of guidance. I gave her some ideas, some inspiration, but ultimately she created her own experience. She created what she needed. And it transformed her life. This, you know, this 1 hour of one day, 30 years in the making. Another beautiful example was I worked with a community of motherless daughters. So these were women who lost their mothers at young ages. And they were all about to turn at some point in the next year or two, the age that their mother was when their mother died. And they knew this date to the second their entire life. Every ounce of their being and every fiber of themselves knew that this day was coming. Nobody else knew. You know, they often shared with me that even their husbands, their you know, friends, nobody knew that this day was coming up. And so what do you do on that day? What do you do on the day that you turn the same age that your mother was when she died? And then what do you do the next day when you now have turned one day older than she got to live? Where's the guidebook? Where's the, you know, where's the acknowledgement there? And so we work together on, again, understanding the framework of ceremony, understanding the basis of ritual, giving them some ideas, pointing them in the right direction, and then allowing them each to choose their own rituals to create a ceremonial experience that was intentional and symbolic and meaningful to them. A group of people can all take the same three rituals, and the ceremony story is going to be so different because we put ourselves into that experience and we reflect our own lived experiences, our own values, our own beliefs. So yeah, it's been quite an amazing creative process to see how we can take these simple ingredients. And I often say that the ceremony pot, and ceremony is like a big cooking pot, and the rituals are the ingredients that we throw in. So I can give each of us the same ingredients, but we're going to cook them in different orders and different ways, and they're going to simmer for longer or shorter. And ultimately, we're all going to make our own different and unique meal from that.
I love that we're talking about ingredients. What are the ingredients for rituals? I feel like my favorite ingredient for ritual is fire. What are some of the other ingredients for rituals, or what are some of the most powerful ones that you see and use in your work?
Yeah. So the way that we built Be Ceremonial was with these ingredients in mind. And when I work with individuals or families or communities, I come back to it and I call it the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's for me to remember. It's for them to remember. Again, there's so much permission to deviate and go off of this, but I love these kind of simple reminders. We talk about the fact that, you know, where's the guidebook? Where's the roadmap? Well, this is a bit of a roadmap. So the first thing is really distilling your ritual or your ceremony down to one intention. If you try to make your ritual or your ceremony do too many things, it may not do any of them well. That's not to say you can't have multiple intentions, but if you can get really clear on why are you doing this ritual? What, you know, what is the purpose of it? What is the hope of it? And if you can distill that down to one word or one sentence, it can really guide the rest of the experience. So oftentimes I'll work with families And they think they want a certain kind of ceremony. And when we get clear on their intention, we realize this, the ceremony that you're planning is not what you want or need at all. The best example is a lot of times people think they need a celebration of life after a loved one has died. And ultimately, when we get clear on their intention, it's probably something closer to they need time to heal. They need time for quiet, for reflection. So a celebration of life is not always that same conducive environment to healing and reflection. So instead, we might create a healing ceremony, you know, a few months before a celebration of life and give the family an opportunity to come together in a more quiet, reflective space and do something that is a little bit more private, a little bit more personal, a little bit more tender before they move into a more public arena where they are now having to be with their grief and support the grief of others as well. So getting clear on that intention is paramount. Number two is the idea of holding polarities. And I talked about it earlier a little bit, how we have this pursuit of happiness and joy and gratitude where, you know, we're in this gratitude filled world, just be grateful. But what that can often do is this idea of toxic positivity. It's holding polarities is thinking about two things that this ceremony is holding that seem in tension with each other. They seem like polar opposites. And then finding space for both to exist. And a beautiful example of that is my husband and I decided to get married, and his father had just received his terminal diagnosis. The family was coming in from Sweden and my family here. We decided to have a very small family-oriented wedding ceremony on the beach in the middle of Tofino storm season. And I wanted to carve out space for grief. And I had so many people say to me, it's a wedding. Why would you want grief to have any room at this wedding? Like, no, no, no. Focus on happiness. You're the bride. You shouldn't be sad. Luckily, and listen to that intuitive nature within myself. Like, no, like there is a grief here. There is an elephant in the room. And if we don't acknowledge it, it's going to feel inauthentic. Mm-hmm. So within our wedding ceremony, we created a grief ritual to acknowledge the grief that we were all feeling, that this would be the only time our two families were together intact. So we held space for those polarities. Number three is this idea of a rite of passage, the past, the present, the future, what was, what is, what will be. Thinking about moving through a ceremony in these kind of different chapters or different stages. So you think about a ritual that helps you release the past. You think about a ritual that helps you be present in the now. And then you think about a ritual that helps you set intentions for what will be or carry a legacy forward. The fourth one is what you were talking about a little bit. It's the four elements. There's different cultures around the world who identify different elements. You know, there's some cultures have five elements, some have metal and wood. But for me, I take the fire, water, earth, and wind and air as my four elements. And then ether is the space between. So sometimes there's that fifth element of things that connect us. But thinking about the role of water, the role of fire, the role of earth, the role of air. How can you integrate one or all of those? And my go-to elements are fire and water always. So when I'm struggling a little and feeling a little off balance, I think maybe I need more air. Maybe I need more earth. Maybe that will help recalibrate me during this time. So I will intentionally go into the forest and do a breathing ritual to help ground me, or I'll sing. I'll do something that allows that air ritual to be acknowledged. Mm-hmm. And then five is the senses. So thinking about your taste, your smell, your sight, your hearing, your touch. Thinking about the different ways that we experience this life and how can you bring in a ritual that through the power of scent might transport you back to a place that you've once visited, or through something that you hear. Maybe you play a favorite song and that audio experience transports you and reconnects you to that moment. Thinking about the five senses in a creative way of, you know, what is it that I'm trying to, again, coming back to that clear intention. And then how can I draw on my sensory experience to help bring out that intention?
Thank you so much for that. Well, it's so helpful to have a formula because I think we intuit those things. We know I want to burn something, but like when it's in that context of everything you just shared, I just feel like now you can go and pick and choose from those. It's almost like you have a toolbox.
Well, it's like learning to draw, right? You can be creative, but you need the tools, the paper and the pen, and maybe some skills that you've developed from different people, some tutorials, some lessons, and we're learning from each other. I have a master's in cultural mythology. So years ago, I was studying all of these things under the context of myth and story and how cultures can move through these times of change. And I was so fascinated by it, this idea of myth and logic, mythos and logos. Our whole world is built on these two pillars. Mythos is the world of creativity and make-believe and wonder and awe and magic and all of these beautiful things that we can, you know, we can't pinpoint. They're not tangible. And then logos is the logic. It's the idea of, okay, here's the things that I can prove. Here's the research. Here's the structure. Here's that kind of more masculine sense of the guide, the framework. And ultimately, we need both. If we look at the way that the healthiest societies thrive, they have a very strong connection with both mythos and logos. They have both pillars, you know, up in their society and in their beliefs and their day-to-day life. In our Western society, we have fallen into this place of logos where we have to prove things, and the creativity and the myth and the storytelling, all of that is a nice afterthought, right? It's a soft skill. And so we are lopsided. We are in a lopsided society. We have lost touch with all the beautiful wonder that comes from holding up that world of mythos, that world of magic. And so for me, ritual and ceremony, yes, there's a logic to it. Yes, there are scientific research journals that show the power of ritual in our mental health and you know, the dopamine release when we go into cold water and all of the, you know, there is the science that's there. And then there's the magic and the wonder and the unexplainable parts of all of this, which, you know, especially working at end of life, I meet people all the time who they believe in something, but they don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. And they often feel embarrassed. They're like, oh, like, I know I can't prove that. That's not what it's about. It's not about proving things. We have to kind of hold these two pillars up for ourselves so that we can find our own balance.
So how can we start to address that? I think that what you just said is a really important point. I recently lost my dear stepmother at the end of August. She passed away. My dad, who's a very sort of logical, scientific, you know, like he used to tell us that we weren't allowed to get carsick because it's not scientifically proven that you could be carsick. It's just all in your head. He really had these beliefs. And so we've been trying to support him in his loss of his wife for the last 25 years. And I've been really feeling her with me. She wanted me to have her diamond engagement ring, which was her prized possession. And I've been wearing it on my hand. I haven't taken it off since I came back from her celebration of life. The other day I was at soccer watching my son, and I took a picture of it to send to my dad because I felt her with me watching my son play this game. I felt her, like, not, oh, I felt her. Like, I felt her. She was there. And I hesitated. It was a real experience for me, but I hesitated to even tell him that because I know he doesn't believe it. But I told him anyway, and he was like, you know, crying and like, I know, I feel like we had just had this conversation a few weeks ago about how he doesn't believe in any of that stuff. And she's just gone and she's going to turn into some other animal now and her cells will, you know, very scientific. I guess my question is, how do we begin to dip our toe into that world of the magic, that world of the unknown with each other? Because I don't know where we go, but I know that we don't just disappear. Like I can feel her presence with me. How do I create language around that that doesn't make me feel like I'm being silly? Or how do we shift that?
Another version of that question that I get asked all the time is, how do I introduce rituals to my family member or to my friend or to my client who is resistant? And my answer is, until you have a strong connection and relationship with ritual and ceremony yourself, it's almost impossible to convince somebody to do it for themselves. Because we all learn by example. My father, who, you know, from Edmonton, small town, and I have his permission to share this, you know, of a certain generation, not very logos oriented. There's, in his mind, there's not much point in talking about what happens when you die because it's just, it's nothing, right? There's a very clear version for him. 6 or 7 years ago, he was given a terminal diagnosis. He has survived it. But I think in that experience of facing your own death, you know, was given a few months to live and then he had this radical surgery and survive. I think it shifted something in him. Recently, his best friend was dying and he called me up and he was on his way to a lunch with all of his tennis friends. They've been playing tennis together for the last 40 years, the same group of men. And he said, you know, I'm going to this lunch and I know it's just going to be, you know, it's the man who's dying. It's his birthday lunch. And I know that everybody's going to do everything they can to avoid talking about the fact that he's dying. He ended up dying 3 weeks later. So everybody knew this was the last birthday This was likely the last time they all gathered as a community of men. And my dad was so worried that nobody was going to do anything, that it was just going to be a regular lunch where we just pushed down those feelings. So he called me up and he said, I want to do something, but I don't know what to do. Where do I start? And I said, okay, Dad, well, what is it that you think is needed? And I listened and I gave her a couple of prompts and a couple of thoughts and questions. And ultimately he came up with his own ritual, and he went and he found in his old locker this old tennis racket from the 1950s. And he brought it with him to the lunch, and in front of this group of men in their late 70s and early 80s, he proclaimed that this was Brian's tennis racket, and we were all going to pass it around, and we were going to share something of meaning that Brian has brought to our lives, something that he's done, something that made us laugh, a funny memory, or something that he has taught them. And so one by one, this group of 12 men passed this old tennis racket around, and they shared what he's meant to them. And I told my dad later, a lot of this movement is often around a living funeral, a living wake. This is what these men were doing. They were letting Brian hear before he died how much of an impact he made on each of them. And the tennis racket, it was the symbol, right? The symbolism was not only meaningful to my dad because he had been given this from somebody that he loved and respected, but all these men now connected with this tennis racket, right? It held something meaningful for each of them. The intention was to elevate this lunch, not just to a regular lunch, but something meaningful because it was the last. It was the last of these lunches that would look like this. The action was moving it around from person to person without a lot of prescription. He didn't tell them what they had to say. He actually even said, you don't have to say anything. You can just hold it for a few minutes if you want. And then the meaning came in, like, my dad could never have predicted how meaningful that was to everybody involved, but most importantly to Brian, who later shared with him that he felt like that was the missing thing that he had needed before he died. This was the thing that he didn't know how to create for himself. And my dad, in a fairly simple way, right? It didn't take a lot of planning. It wasn't something that he, you know, ran through a script in his head. But that ritual became this beautiful bond. As we think about the creativity, the ideas that we can unlock within ourselves, it doesn't have to be big and complicated. It can just be that. Yeah. That meaningful action.
There is something about objects. There's an elegance to, and the gift that they give us, the physical object, the tennis racket, gave them all permission for it not to be just them. It was like they were now a part of something. Because if you just have to go around in a circle and share what you're feeling, like, you don't know, is it just me? Am I out here on my own? But that created a way that connected them all. It was a thread that ran through them all. And it was almost like a safety net for them, like that they were all almost held by that object.
It takes courage to go first, right? It takes vulnerability to go first. And my dad stepped into that vulnerability. This was not something that was easy for him. He called me ahead of time because he was nervous. He didn't want to do it wrong. But ultimately, in our conversation, he realized he actually had what it took. And he stepped into that vulnerability. And by leading and showing them, and leading by example and showing them what was possible, their guard was down. And, okay, well, Don just did that and shared and cried a little. Didn't mean that they, you know, some men told, you know, raunchy, hilarious stories and had everybody in stitches. That was wonderful too. It wasn't about having to cry and express a single emotion. Again, it was holding space for whatever emotion showed up that day. I just love the simplicity of that. And I think if we can all start to acknowledge and recognize these moments that seem fleeting, these invisible moments that pass us by every day, if we can think about, okay, my friendship just ended with somebody. What am I going to do to acknowledge that end of a friendship? Or somebody that I know just lost their job. How can I help them through this time of change and not just say, don't worry, I'll get a new job, because that's suppressing the process, the experience that they're going through. How can we look to ritual as a way to help them acknowledge all of these times of change that we face, and not just those kind of big moments where we have that script in front of us?
Mm-hmm. Because they all feed each other. Like, you have to have the littler ones. They're almost practice. I mean, yeah. I imagine creating those rituals for yourself in the little everyday things gets that muscle going, so that when the bigger life events happen, you have this skill to draw from that can support you to create that for yourself and for the people in your community, right?
Yeah. And that's, we've just launched our daily rituals for self-care in our app. And that's the mentality of it. It's like, we got to start flexing these muscles. We need to have a relationship with ritual, you know, on an ongoing basis, so that when something big or hard happens, Yes, it will still be hard. Yes, it will still, you know, bring up all these emotions, but we will have things around us. We will look around and be like, I've got this. I've got this. I can move through this. I can go through that tunnel and get to the other side of this emotion. Or I can look at somebody who's struggling and I can offer them some tools and say, okay, like you're in the midst of it right now. You feel stuck. And here are some ways that we can move through this together.
I think this is a good time for you to tell us a little bit about the app and how it works and how somebody listening to this who's going, okay, I feel the ceremony shaped hole in my life and I'm ready and I'm lost. I don't know how to, I'm not particularly spiritual or religious or, but I still feel this, but I don't know where to start. How can your app help them?
Yeah. So, and there's a few kind of ways in. There's the idea of daily rituals. So maybe you're looking at, you want to just start slow and gentle and think about a morning ritual or a bedtime ritual, or looking at rituals to express your grief or anger or joy, you know, and so you can pick and choose from a bunch of rituals and we invite you to make them your own. So you kind of go through the app experience and you choose a ritual. It's kind of like choosing a Spotify playlist. So you choose your playlist, you go through it, and then you get to pick and choose the rituals that you connect with. And then we guide you through it and you can follow our language, but we really invite you to then think about how you can make it your own. What are the ingredients you can add to make it personal? So that's the daily rituals, those kind of singular events that happen. Most of the rituals in our app take 5 minutes or less. They don't require a lot of planning or a lot of ingredients. We really want to give people the tools to kind of build ritual into their day-to-day life. And then we have the life ceremonies. So these span, you know, from birth to death, all of these moments in between. So we've got ceremonies surrounding fertility and pregnancy loss, ending breastfeeding, all the moments that show up at the beginning of life around birth. And then we've got moments surrounding moving into a new home or moving out of a home, going through a divorce, going through marriage, like going through seasonal shifts. So thinking about the solstice and the moon and how we can tap into the natural environment. And then a big part of the app is focused on end of life. That's usually where people come to us, is through an experience of grief or loss. That's the ceremony shaped hole has been there all along, but they feel it the most when they're grieving and when the people around them don't know what to do and likely do nothing. Or they're given a template script and they, nope, that's not for me. That's not what I need or want. You can create a ceremony if you've received a terminal diagnosis, if you're looking at medical aid and dying, if you're creating a living funeral or a celebration of life or scattering somebody's ashes, if you're looking for a place to start and you just want some inspiration, you want to be guided through this process. Again, coming back to that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, all of the rituals in the app, and there's hundreds of them. They're neutral, kind of a neutral palette. You can be religious, you can be spiritual, you can have strong cultural traditions and still use our app. And if you have none of that and you're really guided by that logic mentality, you can take the rituals and fit them into your life. So you move through and you pick and choose the rituals that are meaningful to you, and you build your own ceremony, and then the app guides you through that ceremony when you're ready. You can do it on your own. You can do it as a group of people. We try to, again, give people lots of options to make it their own and not be prescriptive. We're trying to open that door for people and say, here's a place to start. You can also gift it to somebody that you know, so you can create a ceremony if a friend of yours has had a miscarriage or a friend of yours is going through a divorce and you want to send them something to show your support. You can purchase it on their behalf and then send it to them and then invite them to go through it on their own.
So beautiful. How do people find that? Do they just go to the app store?
Yeah. So our website is beceremonial.com. You can create a web-based version of the platform of the app. So you can go to app.beceremonial.com. Or you can download the app in any of the app stores and have it on your phone. It's free to set up an account and you can access some of the material in there. And then you can become a member to unlock everything. And our members also have access to workshops and courses. We do monthly gatherings, seasonal gatherings. We meet online and we're all becoming ceremonial together. We're really building a community of people who are wanting to step into this space and learn from each other, share our stories, and transform the way that our society is moving through these times of change, and be that beacon of light and that beacon of hope for other people who might feel lost.
I love that so much. I want to ask you if there's a particular ceremony or ritual even that you experienced or witnessed, whether you led it or were a part of it, that has really, really stayed with you, that has maybe been like among the most powerful.
Yeah. So at the beginning of the pandemic, I was turning 40. My 30s were full of a lot of loss and a lot of grief, a lot of joy, a lot of gratitude, both sides of the coin. And I found myself in Tofino 10 years after we'd gotten married, and I was there and I wanted to acknowledge and release some of the things that I experienced in my 30s. So I created my own little ceremony. And then I wanted to be present in the moment, and I found my way in the cold ocean and the Pacific in the beginning of March and dunked down 3 times and then came out and set some intentions for what I wanted my 40s to hold. And that experience kind of unlocked something in me around my aliveness. And so I came home to Vancouver and I started hosting weekly ceremony swims in the ocean. And what it's done, I think, is it's a community care experience. So we're taking care of ourselves, but we're also taking care of each other. And every week, whoever wants is welcome to join us at the beach. And we spend time walking along the ocean, the beach, choosing an object that's reflective of something that we're grieving. And then we come together and we share what we're grieving that day. And it might be something big and hard. It might be something small that we didn't even realize was there. But we share that object, we share that grief, and then we release it into the ocean in a way that feels right to us. And we go into the ocean and we have the cold water experience, which activates that aliveness, that magic, that feeling of connection. There is nowhere to be but in the here and now when you're in cold water in the middle of winter in the Pacific Ocean.
That's the truth.
That is the truth. And then we come back in and we warm up and we share what we're going to carry with us for the rest of the day or the rest of the week, something we learned or experienced or noticed. And we share that not only to remind ourselves, but also to kind of piggyback off each other and say, oh yeah, that I noticed that too. Isn't that amazing how the ocean made us feel that way? Or so if I think back to, I mean, we've now had, oh gosh, I can't even think about it, you know, over 100 of these ceremonies, if not more, a couple hundred. And if I think about the times when I've seen somebody who's shown up for the very first time to one of these ceremonies and they're not quite sure what we're doing, they're kind of like you with your great burn. You know, my friends are, you know, friends of friends or people that have just heard about us, they show up and they're kind of looking at us a little suspicious, like, what's happening here? And then they realize and they spend time walking along the beach and then you see them pick up the heaviest rock they can find. Or they're dragging this giant log with them and they plop it down in the middle of the circle and they say, I'm going to go first. And they share what they're grieving. And we've had people share that they lost a child, that they lost a spouse, they lost a dog or a pet. We've had people share grief that they've been holding for 30 or 40 years. We've had people minimize their grief and then realize, no, look, I am grieving that today. It might be small. It might be insignificant to a lot of people, but to me, it's important today. And we all hold space for that. We're not there to fix or solve their grief. We're just listening. So if I think back to some of the most meaningful moments, it's when that happens. It's when a group of strangers comes together and holds space for each other through ritual, through ceremony, and we're activating that community care. We're not making each other feel like we have to go at this alone.
I think that's one of them. I mean, you mentioned it sort of at the top of the show, how one of the things that led us to get to this place was this individual where we're simultaneously feel like we have to do it alone. We have to do it alone, but the way everybody else is doing it, right? Like I have to get married the way everybody else is doing it, but I have to do it alone. I have to deal with my mother's death the way that everybody, I have to do the funeral. I have to do but I have to do it alone. Like we're in community and building community around these rituals and ceremonies is It you may not have those particular people with you when you do your big life ceremony, but you now know how to do it in community. And that's a really important skill that we're not really taught. We're not really taught how to be in this culture in community well. We don't really know how to do that very well. And so I feel like the work you're doing is, and as somebody who's participated in some of those swims with you, the work you're doing is really profoundly important and needed. And from my own heart to your heart, thank you. I just want to thank you. I really appreciate the work that you're doing in the world. And I think you're an amazing human being.
One of my favorite quotes is many hands make for light work. Mm-hmm. And I feel that this is heavy work. I have people say it all the time. Oh, I could never do what you do. You know, you're with people who are, you know, grieving or dying or somebody who's just died. Like, how can you, you know, you've got little kids. How can you do that? And again, it's like, well, this is happening. And either we step toward it and we walk through the fire and we find ways through it, or we suppress it and push it down. And the alternative for me is just not an option. Mm-hmm. We have to step into this space There's a beautiful quote by Glennon Doyle that talks about the fact that we keep making circles and we need to instead make horseshoes. And so I think about where are all the circles in my life that feel closed off? And if I think about these weekly ceremonies, I've had people say, oh, that sounds amazing. I wish I could join. And I think, okay, let's just open up the circle and say, of course, come. And there is a place, obviously, for closed community and for that safety and for that brave space to take shape and form. But my invitation for everybody is to think about where can you open up a little bit and, you know, see somebody who is moving through something. Maybe it's grief, maybe it's anger, maybe, you know, and how can you step toward that and offer them something that you might be able to hold space for, you know, offer to go for a ritual walk in the forest or a swim in the sea or do something that allows them and allows you in turn to recognize what you're feeling and holding and move through those emotions so they don't get stuck in us and turn into those trauma balls, because that's happening far too much. And I see it at every twist and turn in my work. People have unresolved trauma. And when somebody dies, and we are all going to die, when that happens, those trauma balls get reactivated. And it's quite destructive for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
There's two things that I do at the end of every episode. Well, one I do at the beginning of every episode before I even get in the call with you. I say a little prayer. I ask spirit to speak through me so that it's not just Kate and the rational mind speaking and that it's this magical thing, asking what needs to be asked so that what needs to be answered can be answered so that what needs to be heard can be heard. Then I pull a card from my angel card deck. Well, I went to pull one and five of them flew out of the bowl at me. They all fell on the floor. I was cleaning them up. And I was like, no, actually, I feel like I'm supposed to read all of these to Megan and to the listeners. So I'll read them to you in the order that I picked them up. Love, acceptance, flexibility, exploration, and surrender.
We need all of them. They're all the...
Right? But like in the context of the conversation that we just had... How do I open my heart up? How do I horseshoe open my heart up to allow more ritual, more creativity, and even ceremonies and people in feelings? How do I open myself up so that I can not only live the life I was meant to live, but operate in reality as more of myself, as the truest version of myself and in communion with the truest version of reality, like really see what's happening. Really be okay with it and in love with it and allow it. And I just like, I feel like those things, everything that you said and those things are like, that's it. That's our formula.
The flexibility is so important. I think that's the thing that most people are scared about. They think, and you know, we didn't get into it today, but I do a lot of work on avoiding cultural appropriation. And, you know, there is a place and a time for a rigid ritual that is, you know, embedded in culture and passed down across time. Of course, there is a place for that. And there's also a place for us to create new rituals that serve us today. And being mindful of the cultures around us is a really important part of that.
The last question that I always ask, and I'm going to tweak it a little bit for this conversation, but it'll essentially be the same as the billboard question. I ask it at the end of every episode. And usually I say, if you had a giant billboard that somehow was going to reach all of the people who, and I usually say yearn to be more creative, yearn to have access to this soft, quiet, radiant, mysterious voice inside of themselves. And maybe I won't change it from that, but who also would like to have more ritual and ceremony in their lives, maybe even more community of this nature in their life. But for a lot of the reasons that we've talked about, and even some of the ones we didn't, because some of the stuff that we didn't talk about was the stigma around, like, I feel like there's actually a little bit of a stigma around ritual, and even the word ritual conjures up, you know, we didn't get there. But because of, you know, for all the various reasons that somebody might self-select out of creativity, ritual, ceremony, community, if you could put something on this billboard that would address those objections in their heart and concerns that they had, and would allow them the possibility that these things were available to them. So what would you say? Like, what would you put on that billboard?
I think I would say something along the lines of, you already have ritual and ceremony in your life. Step into it deeper. So every time I meet with somebody, they all realize, oh, I do have ritual in my life. Oh, I didn't realize that's what it was.
Right.
You're already there. Now go further. Now go deeper. because that's where the creative process can really be unlocked and can unfold. As I think about the way that I create ritual today, and it's such a creative experience, whether it's for myself, whether, you know, I hosted a ritual for a community of pregnancy loss people last weekend, 800 people we created at a nature mandala. We chose all these different objects and we created art together to acknowledge our grief. It is a creative process. So the reminder that we already have what it takes, I think, is important for people to hear.
So beautiful. You're so beautiful. I love you.
It's a long billboard.
Thank you for coming. It's okay. Usually people have like, it's like I should describe it this way, but usually people end up saying so much that we just say, you know, when you're driving down the highway and there's like 40 billboards and they're just like down the side of the highway. Yeah. It can be like that. Yeah. There's no limit to your billboard. Yeah. one more thing I will say, ask you is so we've talked about where to find the app, but where else can people go to read more about your work?
Yeah. So on bcmillennial.com, I'm on Instagram and Facebook. Our Be Ceremonial account is there. I'm also under Seeking Ceremony. A lot of the personal work that I do as a ceremonialist and end-of-life doula and celebrant comes under Seeking Ceremony.
Okay. I'll put all that in the show notes.
Wonderful.
I love it. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having me. It was lovely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Kate.
Okay. Were you crying when Megan told that story of her father? I was just picturing this older gentleman coming to his daughter saying, "Help me. I don't know how to create a ceremony for this. I want to create something here, but I don't know how." And I loved how patient and gentle she was in guiding him. He already knew what to do. And I love how she guided him to find that. I just imagine all these old men sitting in a circle sharing this tennis racket and being able to do the thing that was in their bones, which was love their friend and send him off in a beautiful way. Oh my God, I'm going to start crying again. I encourage you to check out the Be Ceremonial app and Megan's work. And if you're lucky enough to grab the last spot on Bowen Island in January for the new year, can't wait to see you there. And if you're not able to come up, please join me in my monthly workshop, Activating Intuition and Creativity, watching people make time for and begin to activate a two-way conversation with this deeply intelligent, unconditionally loving aspect of themselves is the most fulfilling thing I've ever seen or done or been a part of in my life. It's an honor to lead these workshops, and I hope to see you there. Everything you need to know is on kateshepherdcreative.com. So I want to close with this question for you. How might your life transform? What might you be able to resolve or let go of from your past to navigate with more ease in your present if you were to invite in the element of ritual? And if you want support with that, please reach out to Megan directly. I know she would love to help you. Make sure you're signed up for my newsletter. I pick a random person from my email list once every month and send them an original piece of my artwork. It's one of my favorite things to do. It takes a lot to put together the show. Please consider supporting me to do it. You can visit patreon.com/creativegeniuspodcast to find out more. And please keep my jewelry or paintings, and especially gratitude birds, which keep selling out, in mind next time you're looking for a treat for yourself or for a loved one. You can find everything I've mentioned on kateshepherdcreative.com. Thank you for being here, for opening your heart, and for listening. My wish and intention for this show is that it reach into your heart and stir the beautiful thing that lives in there. May you find and unleash your creative genius.